Briefly, I would just like to mention that it happens to be that tonight, tomorrow, is the yahrzeit of the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim is really an individual who left an indelible imprint almost on every aspect of our lives and for future generations. The Mishnah Brura is something that most people live by. He codified, I guess, or explained, and sometimes made clear. Sometimes that was Mishnah Brura. He just clarified. Sometimes it was Halacha L'maisa that he paskined in the Bir Halacha. But basically, you know, he made it possible to go through the calendar of the year and act according to the halacha. In the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, he did something that hadn't been done for I don't know how long, never been done before, but even the concept, he originally started a Shulchan Aruch on Hilchos Lashon Hara, drawn from Kol HaTorah Kula. No precedent for it, like a couple of halachas in the Rambam and a couple of halachas in the Rabbeinu Yoyin and a couple of halachas, other things. But he drew from Kol HaTorah Kula and he wrote this Sefer Chofetz Chaim. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta is quoted to have said, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta was a giant and a genius of all geniuses. You know, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta was the one that when there was a cholera plague in Europe and he wanted everybody to eat on Yom Kippur because he felt that they would be weak and they'd be more susceptible, and he threatened all the Rabbonim of Europe or of his particular country, I'm not sure how far it went. He says if they don't sign on to tell everybody that they have to eat on Yom Kippur, he'll passel all they did. He'll make every get that they ever wrote, he'll make it possible. He was like light years above. They tell the famous story about how came into a yeshiva once to give a shir, and there were 100 Marim Mekoymas that he had given, and some wise guy went and took down the list and made random Marim Mekoymas, like just, you know, one thing, another thing, had nothing to do with each other. Rabbi Yisrael got up, he looked at the Marim Mekoymas when he walked in, he got up, he thought for 1 minute, and then he said a shir. And he told the Talmud, on those Marim Mekoymas, and he told the Talmud that he didn't need the 1 minute to prepare. He was only debating that 1 minute whether it would be too much gaiva in to say the shir immediately or to say the shir. And then he decided, but he has to show people, because Rabbi Yisrael was very into showing the world who he was in genius and Torah so that they should accept his teachings of Musa. And this great Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, the Mishnah Brura, maybe I could have written. Maybe. He says, the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, I couldn't have written. Impossible. He says it was something, I mean, the Chofetz Chaim was like, not shaykh. What oftentimes happened, though, was he was such a tzaddik that it sort of overshadowed his genius and his godless in learning. And many people thought the Chofetz Chaim was the tzaddik hador. The Chofetz Chaim was mamish the godel hador. The Chofetz Chaim was the Meir Simcha of Tvinsk, the Meshe Chochma or Sameach, once at a meeting of Rabbonim, disagreed with the Chofetz Chaim about a certain, they were having a discussion, and he disagreed with him about a certain issue that they were discussing, and which he was entitled to his opinion. He was probably the giant in his generation. But after that, he felt, because he disagreed with the Chofetz Chaim, he should go visit him. So he went to his hotel, and he visited him, and he came out and he said, this Kleine Yidl, he probably stood about so high, the Chofetz Chaim, can control the whole world. He, like, the Chofetz Chaim's word was so powerful, was so accepted, was so insightful, was so, I don't know what it was, you know, I obviously didn't know him. But I did hear that once, the Chofetz Chaim had a son who was also a real, real Mitzuyan. He passed away young. And once he, that son, and Revelvel, Briskarov, Chaim's son, were having a debate. They were arguing and learning. And there was a big argument. And finally, they went to Reb Chaim to be machriya. You know, Reb Belville held his, and the Chofetz Chaim's son held his. So Reb Chaim said to him, "Who are you arguing with Yashrus?" The Chofetz Chaim's Yashrus was like, you couldn't argue with him. The Rashiva's father, Reb David Leibowitz, was a nephew of the Chofetz Chaim. He was his chavrusa for 2 years, learning with him the preparation for the Mishnah Berurah Hilchos Sukkah. Just Hilchos Sukkah, 2 years. It took him 24 years to write the whole Mishnah Berurah. He used to describe his seder with the Chofetz Chaim from 9 in the morning to 9 at night, every day, he says, and the Chofetz Chaim, they would start an issue from the Pasuk and down from the Pasuk, the next day, you know, the Mishnah, the Gemara. And he says, every step of the way, the Chofetz Chaim would be machavim, like they would say a text, and they say, "Well, there's a problem." And the next one would ask the problem. He says, "Well, but you could answer like this," and then answer like this. And Mamish, like, was machavim all the way through, and he went through the whole thing. It took him 2 years just to write Hilchos Sukkah. So he was a super giant. But I thought I would just mention, just for a few moments, a little bit of the personality of this giant. Some people thought that he was a little bit tmimistic. You know, Chofetz Chaim, such a holy man. If somebody started to talk Lashon Hara in front of him, he would fall asleep. If once on a Shabbos, this the Rashiva's father witnessed himself, they served him the soup, and he took a spoon of soup, and he said, "Geschmack, it's very tasty," and he pushed it away. He wouldn't eat it anymore. That's it. He felt he had this the physical pleasure from it. This Malach Elikim. This was like beyond anything we can comprehend. So people think, you know, maybe he was a little tmimistic. He was a little naive. So I know one story that I think is very, very interesting. He heard that that there was no provisions for kosher food for the soldiers in the Polish army. The Jewish soldiers were drafted those days, and there was no provisions for kosher food. So it was like he was in his 90s already. He was a very old man. He immediately got his transportation, whatever, they came with some wagon or this, and he says he's going to Vilna to Reb Chaim Oizer. They have to take care of it. Reb Chaim Oizer was the one who was like took care of most of the issues of that generation. Comes to Reb Chaim Oizer, and he says there's no provisions for kosher food for the soldiers in the Polish army. We must do something about it. Reb Chaim Oizer says to him, "I can't. I'm too busy. Everything comes over my desk. Of the whole world, and all the stokas and all the shaylos and all the..." He was mamish like the manikadur. You know, things were really like, he was the rav of Vilna, but he was the rav of Klal Yisrael in a sense. And he said, I can't. So the Chofetz Chaim says to him, "Shkoyach, thank you very much, you helped me." So Chaim Oizer thought that maybe the Chofetz Chaim didn't hear well, he was already an old man. He thought maybe he didn't understand so well. Maybe he didn't get it. Maybe he didn't realize what he says. "No, I said, I can't help you." So he says, no, you've helped me. And then he tells him the following. He says, "I'm an old man." He says, "And I'm going to go soon to the Olam HaEmes. And when they ask me in the Olam HaEmes why I didn't take care of this problem, now I have an answer. I went to Reb Chaim Oizer and he couldn't do it. He was too busy." The next day he was taken care of. So this little old man, this innocent little old man, this tmimistic old man, he knew exactly what he was doing, but the stories that they tell about him are taka, you know, like some of them at least unbelievable. They tell one story that this individual is a big balsuka, but everybody pursued him. For his money, for his chasodim, he was constantly pursued by everyone, banging on his door day and night. And his wife couldn't handle it. And she said that it has to stop. It can't be. He must go with her to the Chofetz Chaim, and they're going to ask the Chofetz Chaim what to do. So they came to the Chofetz Chaim, and he was eating or finishing his meal, whatever. And they were standing over there in the doorway, not wanting to bother him. And the Chofetz Chaim, it seems, used to say Mizmor LeDavid, you know, Hashem Roi Lo Echsor, when he would eat a meal. So then, at the end, he says, Ach Toi Vochesed Yirdefuni Kol Yemei Chayai. Only good and Chesed should pursue me, should be Roidif me all the days of my life. So he said in Yiddish, they just heard him saying, talking to himself, Ei Bichdav Zayna Nirdof, Zol Dos No Zayn Fun Stok of a Chesed, Fun Toi Vochesed. If I have to be a Nirdof, if I have to be someone who they're being roidif, it should only be from Toiv Chesed. And the woman heard that, and they didn't say hello, they didn't talk to him, they went home, and everything was taken care of. I mean, it was like the schusim that he had, the kedusha that he had, the influence that he had, some say Ruach HaKodesh that he had, this, I don't know about these things, or at least I don't know about these things, but this was really like so, so unique. So there's one story which I would like to share, and then I would like to interpret. Actually, I heard this story. I was at some convention. I heard this story, and the speaker that was to speak before me told this story, and then I after that up and interpreted it. So I want to share that with you. The story was that there was a bocher in Raden, who was Mechalel Shabbos. They saw that he was Mechalel Shabbos. They didn't know what to do. Are we going to tell the Chofetz Chaim, Losh and Hora, that this bocher was Mechalel Shabbos?
What?
Somebody was a bocher that was Mechalel Shabbos. I don't know if he was Mechalel Shabbos all the time, but he was Mechalel Shabbos. He, whatever it was, he did a little Shabbos. So, tell the Chofetz Chaim, first of all, such a thing, and Losh and Hora. Who could say Losh and Hora to the Chofetz Chaim? Mitzad Sheni, it's certainly the Toeles. The Chofetz Chaim could speak to him and could do something about it. How could you not say? Bekitzer, they decided to tell the Chofetz Chaim. They told the Chofetz Chaim, he calls this Bocher in, he spoke to him for 30 seconds, and he left, and he was never Mechalel Shabbos again. But what was very curious was nobody knew what he told him. Nobody knew what happened behind closed doors. So it was, you know, interesting. Like who could imagine, or what would it be like to know, or how important it would be to know? The kids, many years later, Beryl Wine was a rabbi in Miami, so he told this story, and as he was walking out, that's the way he tells the story, right? When I heard the way he told the story, he's walking out, there's a tall old man sitting right over there, and he says, Rebbe, you know, and in Yiddish he says to him, you want to know what happened over there? He says, that was me, I'm the bocher. So he says, yeah, he was the bocher, he's the one that that was Mechalel Shabbos, and that's the bocher. So he said, yeah, tell me what happened. So the bocher described him like this. He says, I was a tall young guy, Chaim was short like this. He calls me in, and he takes hold of my hand, and with tears streaming down his face, he said, Shabbos, Shabbos, Shabbos. That was it. I walked away, and I never was Mechalel Shabbos again. And sort of every, I think he said something, every Erev Shabbos, I would, you know, feel that those tears, or that whatever, that handshake, you know, and I was never Mechalel Shabbos again. So anyway, so what's the pshat? What was he crying about? So Pashtus, you'd say, he was crying about Mechalel Shabbos. How can it be Mechalel Shabbos? But I believe that the tears were not for the Chil Shabbos, but were rather for this poor bocher who didn't appreciate that the Shabbos was. Not the Shabbos that was broken, but the person who broke it. The suffering, the nebuch, the misfortune of the one who did it. And I think that's probably, you know, what took place. Certainly it was a combination of both. But anyway, years later, many years later, and I think I've told this story, just happens to connect a little bit. In fact, I think I told it recently. We were very recently, so forgive me, but and I talk too much, so I can't remember. We were driving, it was Erev Shabbos, we were driving up Bar Ilan with the family to go to the center of town. And I asked the taxi driver, you know, a Chiloni, they're still throwing stones on Bar Ilan. He got very angry. He says, what do they want for my life? What are they, it's not their business what I do on Shabbos. You know, so I said, you don't understand. You don't disturb me if you're Mechal Shabbos. You don't disturb my Shabbos. I feel bad for you that you don't have a Shabbos. And the guy's face, that attitude.
That's the message of the stone.
What's that? I know the stones don't send that message unless you write on it love. Okay, anyway. No, the people that throw the stones do not mean that. But some of us do. The pain, yeah. Okay, Menachem, we know that. Anyway, the pain that a person can feel when he sees someone else doing something wrong, the love for a fellow Jew, and the appreciation for the difference in the quality of life of a person who keeps the mitzvahs and who doesn't, should really be something that should evoke such pain and evoke such tears. And anyway, that was that particular story.
Should evoke tears for us?
What?
Should evoke tears for us?
Sure, we should feel that. I mean, we don't cry too much, but we should feel that. That's really,
and if
it happens to be, it happens to be, let me just conclude, but I really don't want to take too much time. It happens to be that in this parsha that we're reading Shabbos is the parsha of Arvus. And this parsha of Arvus is a very, very strange parsha. Basically what it says is that Pen yesh bochem ish o isha mishpocha o yeshevet. There might be one man or woman or a family that's going to do Avodah Zorah in Eretz Yisrael. And then it says all of Eretz Yisrael is going to be destroyed. Gofris v'melach, sreifo kol arzo. And why? Because v'yelchu v'yavdu elohim achim. They went and they did Avodah Zorah. Rashi at the end of the Torah, Historias Lashem Elokeinu, says that what happened over there says if people did Avodah Zorah, then it depends like this. If it's something that's Nistorois, if it's hidden, that's Lashem Elokeinu. We can't do anything about it. We don't have any Din Arvus. We're not responsible. But if it's Niglois, something that's known, that's Lonu Ulvonenu Adoilom, and we midin arvus kol Yisrael areivu zebuzeh are responsible for it because of the fact that it was biyodeinu limchay. Since it was known, we could have done something about it. Now, listen to what the pasuk says: Pen yesh bochem ish o isha mishpocha o yeshevet. There could be one woman or one man or one family or one shevet that does have a dezora, and it's considered as if the whole Klal Yisrael did it, and all of Eretz Yisrael is going to be destroyed, because this is considered something that's niglois. But look at the niglois. This lady, if there's one man or lady that did that by the Zohar down south, then what do you want from the poor guy up north 3,300 years ago? There's no technology that could carry the message. They didn't have any kind of radios or Morse code or I don't know what other primitive communication. So it's niglois. It could have been known. Maybe if you cared enough, you would travel up and back to see what's going on. I don't know. It's mind-boggling. But yet, Rashi says clearly that something that we could have possibly prevented and we didn't is ki'ilu vayelchu vayavdu yash isho isho mishpocho chay o shevet vayelchu vayavdu him achir, as if everybody did it. So there's a din of Arvus. The din of Arvus is very serious. So I just want to conclude, and maybe at a time when it's close to Rosh Hashanah, and maybe there's more of a serious mood, that we have to be sensitive to ourselves, and we have a responsibility to ourselves. And Chayecha Koidem, our own lives and our own Ruchnius comes first, but we have to feel a certain sense of responsibility to each other. And if there are things that we can do that can have a positive influence, or if there are things that we could do or do or might do or shouldn't do that could have a negative influence is something that we have to be very, very sensitive to. Because the ability to amass, to collect so much responsibility or even so much good is dependent really upon what everybody around us does. We're one unit. The whole Klal Yisrael is one unit. We accepted Arvus Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebuzeh, each one responsible for the other. And I think if we keep that in mind a little bit, then maybe some of the things that we do will be done with a little more caution, a little more thinking about whether or not not only is it good for us, but it could have a negative impact on someone else that I will be held responsible for, or maybe what I do could have a positive impact. And then, on the other hand, there's also something else. What's in my business? It's none of my business. You know, recently there was in the Yeshiva Rockaway, the Menahel of the Yeshiva, Rabbi Aaron Brofman, passed away. It was about 5 weeks ago, something like that. And he was a person who literally worried for every problem in Klal Yisrael. Anytime you would see him, he'd be worried about this, about the other thing. His tears would be swelling up in his eyes. He really felt it. And so when I came to be Menachem Oval, I told his son, I said, in his life, there was one phrase that was not relevant. Mind your own business. There was no such thing. Because he felt everything was his business. Not that he messed in other people's business, but he felt the pain. Everything's his business. And it's true. Anything that has to do with Klal Yisrael is really the business of all of us. And I think that at a time like this, before Rosh Hashanah, if we wish to, on the one hand, amass schusim, you know, gather many more schusim, and at the other hand, to be sure that we remain free of any additional responsibilities or chiyuvim, then one of the things that we really have to keep in mind is this arvus. It's an amazing opportunity, the hashbor that I have, if just my own sitting and learning, that's all, just the example that I set, just the integrity with which I deal with people, just the fineness of the Beinot L'chaveroi, whatever it is that I do, the example that I set in the positive and the negative has so much impact on others, and all of that, that means everything that those people do or don't do that's based upon my influence accrues to me. So a person can have an amazing set of mitzvahs, amazing masses of mitzvahs that are not his, only caused by him. And by the same token, the other is also true. The Chofetz Chaim writes in a letter, and with this I want to conclude, the Chofetz Chaim writes in a letter that, you know, we're going to come to the Olam HaEmes, and I don't want to scare anybody, but we're going to come to the Olam HaEmes, and they're going to say, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Why were you Machal Shabbos? Why did you eat Tarfus? What? Not me. Never did it in my life. If you're talking about my neighbor. And the answer will be yes. We're talking about your neighbor. But it was Biyod Cholimchus. You could have had a positive influence. You could have done something about it. You could have inspired that neighbor. You could have had some type of a hashpah, and therefore you carry responsibility for it. And the same thing is true when a person has positive hashpah. If a person teaches someone, if a person inspires someone, everything that comes out of that is all from the same person. The schus hamalabe ben chaveiro Torah kiilu yulodoi. Teach someone Torah as if you gave birth to him. You know how far that goes? You know how serious that is? The Gemara says that on the famous Maisa where the Jew sold his ox to his Goyish neighbor, and the ox was a hard worker and everything was beautiful, working hard. Come Shabbos, the ox refused to work. And there's nothing this poor guy can do to get his ox to work. This guy, he bought an ox, he wants him to work. And finally he got so frustrated that he goes back to his Jewish neighbor and says, here, take your stupid ox back. I want my money back. I'm not interested in this whole deal. It worked 6 days good, and today... So the neighbor says, the Jew says, what?
Stubborn ox.
Stubborn ox, yeah, but wait a second, but it's more than that. See, he has a name now. So the neighbor, the Jew says, let me talk to him. I'll handle it. He goes over to the ox, and he whispers into his ear. He says, the Torah says, lo itase kol melocha, ato bincho mitecho, avduho amoscho vehentecho. Your behemoth is not allowed to do a melocha. Kolzman, you were a behemoth of a Jew, you're not allowed to do melocha. Now that you belong to the goy, you're allowed to do melocha. And the ox jumps up, and he goes back to work. And the chachomim said that the goy was so nispoiled, yeah, this was so nispoiled with this maisa that he became a gansedek. And the Chachomim gave him the name Chanina ben Turo, Chanina the son of the ox. And I believe that it wasn't just coincidentally they call him son of an ox, but the ox who inadvertently, not with any teaching intent, not with any commitment to Harbosas Torah, not with any intent to be mashpia on this person or be megayer this person, but that ox served as the influence of this guy,
to holy ox,
okay, but he served as the influence to influence this guy to become a Ger Tzedek. He was called by Chazal Ben Tura, the son of the ox, because Hamalamed Ben Chaveiro Tzeiro Ki'ilu Yolodim, the indirect hashpo of a behemoth who had no intent and no knowledge and no thinking and no nothing, but this was the cause. It was considered as if that this was his father because Hamalamed Ben Chaveiro Ki'ilu Yolodim. So I just thought that at a time like this, when we wish to amass greater schusim, it's kedai to keep in mind that whatever hashpo in a positive way we can have on anyone else, we assure that those schusim will be granted to us. And one thing you should know about schusim, they divide, they had it called, they multiply without diminishing. Because I get a schus for his mitzvah, that doesn't take away from what he gets. He has a schus, and I get a schus too. So it's a good investment, and Hashem should help. We should maximize and diversify our investments.